Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Well, hello there and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up in a few moments, Pope Benedict's words on the occasion of the solemn liturgical rite of inauguration of his Petrine ministry. What Latin for the canonization of Thomas More and John Fisher. And a fleeting acquaintance with all the popes of the 20th century, previous to the late Pope John Paul II. My first pope, well, Saint Pius X. Since canonized a saint, he's Papa Giuseppe Sarto, who took the name of Pius X when he was elected to the See of Peter on the 4th of August, 1903. A man who was then described by one of the cardinals who elected him, Cardinal Mathieu, a father and a shepherd. Interestingly, this view of a pope who would be more of a father and a shepherd and less of a politician was also shared by the Catholic rulers of that time in Europe. In 1903, they still exercised their right of veto over the choice of a Roman pontiff. It was to be for the last time, ironically one of the first gestures of the very man they had chosen as pope was to remove this ancient privilege from them. When this pope died in the summer of 1914, Europe was at war. People said he died of a broken heart. The idea of a great war had proved too much for him to bear. And when the cardinals gathered in conclave to elect a new pope, the man they chose to play that capital and unprecedented role which the war offered to the Holy See proved no fortuitous choice. He was an experienced diplomat. His name was Giacomo della Chiesa, and taking the name of Benedict XV, he was elected to the See of Peter on the 3rd of September 1914. And the war he fought so hard to stop finally ended 4 years into his pontificate at the 11th hour of the 11th day of November 1918, leaving 40 million dead. Pope Benedict XV rejoiced. His war pontificate was over. Since 1914, he'd written 3 encyclicals about peace. The name of the third pope of the 20th century was Achille Ratti, who took the name of Pope Pius XI. Elected on the 6th of February 1922, his first gesture was unexpected. A pope had not appeared on the balcony looking out towards St. Peter's Square, towards the Italian state, since 1870. He was the pope who would settle the Roman question by signing the Lateran Pacts. But he was also the founder of our radio station, and that's why, since the time of Pius XI, we have recordings of all the pope's voices. Beginning with an appeal for peace he himself made in September 1938, exactly a year before the outbreak of the Second World War.
La trepidazione di tanti nostri figli.
We were in France there, and a radio message it must have been. Yes, it was when there was tension with Hitler already in 1938.
Rosminian Father Charles Leroux recalls hearing this message in Paris as a young man.
In that message, he offered to God his life in exchange for peace for humanity.
That call for peace on the part of Pius XI was repeated many times by the pope who followed him, Pius XII. Papa Pacelli was elected on the 2nd of March 1939, and war raged throughout most of his pontificate. Less than a month after the outbreak of the Second World War, Pius XII published his first encyclical, Summi Pontificatus, on the unity of human society. In the encyclical, the new pope branded racial prejudice as the most pernicious of modern errors and condemned, quote, the forgetfulness of that law of human solidarity dictated by the equality of rational nature in all persons to whatever people they belong, unquote. On October the 28th, 1939, in Britain, the Times commented on the encyclical under the headline, New Idolatry Condemned. And across the Atlantic, the New York Times carried an almost identical headline.
Pope condemns persecution.
The New York Times editorial ran as follows.
The voice of Pius XII is a lonely voice in the silence and darkness enveloping Europe this Christmas. He is about the only ruler left on the continent of Europe who dares to raise his voice at all.
The regal Pope Pius XII was succeeded by a very different-looking pope, gone down in history as good Pope John. But while this pope may have written an encyclical on peace, pacem in terris, he's gone down in history for a very different reason.
We were all taken aback when we saw how small Pope John was. He seemed a kind of little miniature sort of person in comparison with the figure of Pius XII. This stubby little character seemed a complete contrast with Pius XII.
In those years, Monsignor Charles Burns was studying for the priesthood in Rome.
And certainly what we didn't for a moment suspect was that within two or three months, when was this? He was elected the end of October of 58. And 25th of January 59, he calls the Ecumenical Council.
Extraordinary.
Well, I mean, that morning, coming down to the Gregorian with all the newspapers, all the headlines, Ecumenical Council called.
Il convenire odierno del Sacro Collegio Cardinalizio, della prelatura e del popolo romano in questa basilica di San Paolo fuori le mura.
He did this on his own. Even his Secretary of State, as far as I know, Cardinal Tardini, didn't know about this.
Carmelite Father Redemptus Vallerbeck was also a seminarian at that exciting time in the history of the Catholic Church.
And the cardinals were astounded. I remember one of them thought he was hearing things. He couldn't believe it. They had spoken about a council under Pius XII, but they had decided against it because it was complicated. And, of course, you stir up things that sometimes it's better left lie fallow. So I think they felt if Pius XII, who was an intellectual, couldn't handle it and didn't feel that it was the right time, you know, how would this rather simple man do it? But that was what he called the inspiration of the Spirit. He felt that the Spirit was calling him to do that, to let a bit of fresh air into the Church, and to open up windows. And he has used that expression, and I think he meant it literally, to open up new venues for the Church.
Venerabiles fratres, gaudet mater ecclesia, quod singulari divine providentiae munere, optatissimus iam dies illuxit.
And when Pope John XXIII died, his successor, Giovanni Battista Montini, who took the name of Paul VI on the 21st of June 1963, found himself with the delicate task of closing and implementing the Second Vatican Council. He was not always understood.
He was very gentle, and he was a gentleman. Perhaps the world didn't quite understand him.
William Wakefield Baum, created cardinal by Pope Paul VI. The world Paul VI lived in was a changing world, the same inhabited by America's first Catholic president, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, with whom he'd met less than 2 weeks into his pontificate.
Standard of living for you citizens.
But while the young American president's world was modern, vital, and projected into the 21st century, the newly elected pope's world was deeply anchored into the past, rife with pomp and circumstance. A situation Paul VI was determined to change, when, in a symbolic gesture, he cancelled one of the Catholic Church's centuries-old traditions by giving away the Triple Crown. And again, when this last pope ever to be crowned brought it upon himself to become the first pilgrim pope. But despite these gestures of hope, the decade and a half of his pontificate was also marked with a string of situations of conflict for which Pope Paul VI had anticipated an impelling plea for peace in October 1965, as Archbishop John Foley recalls.
It was the first visit of a pope to the United Nations. Even some of the people from communist states felt the power of what he was saying.
And that takes us to 1978, the year gone down in history as the year of the three popes. I'll read you a list of dates that eventually led to the election of Pope John Paul II on the 16th of October of that same year. August the 6th, Giovanni Battista Montini, Pope Paul VI, dies in Castel Gandolfo at the age of 81, after a 15-year pontificate, August 26. The Cardinal Patriarch of Venice, Albino Luciani, is elected Pope, taking the name of Pope John Paul I. September 28. The bells of St. Peter's toll to let the world know the newly elected Pope is dead. Barely a month had gone by since they had tolled for Pope Paul VI, and people listened in disbelief. People like Cardinal William Wakefield Baum, one of the members of the very College of Cardinals to elect Pope John Paul I.
One of my priests called me and he said, "The Pope has died." And my first reaction is, "You're mistaken. You must have been listening to a program about the death of Pope Paul VI.
He had been reading one of his homilies. I was there.
Bishop John McGee, personal secretary to Pope John Paul I.
He wanted to refresh his mind, because now that he was Pope, he would have to give many homilies.
Lea sans endotas. It is about love that I want to speak to you today.
His pontificate, although brief, was, from our point of view, a moment of grace. He again appeared to everyone as a very loving father.
Our Heavenly Father wants us perfect like this.
And when Pope John Paul II was elected as the 263rd successor of Peter, his pontificate was to last for over a quarter of a century. It was he who led the Catholic Church into the third millennium. And as we know, the first pope to be elected in this millennium is our present Holy Father. Pope Benedict, who less than a week after appearing on the central balcony of the Basilica of St. Peter's on the day of his election, returned to St. Peter's Square to celebrate the solemn liturgical rite of inauguration of his Petrine ministry. On that occasion, he offered us his first official words as Roman pontiff. I'd like to go back to that moment by offering you some extracts from a translation in English voiced for us by Sean Patrick Lovett. But let's begin by listening to the voice of Pope Benedict as he speaks to us in Italian.
Chi crede non è mai solo.
Those who believe are never alone, neither in life nor in death, he said, speaking in Italian. The Church is young. She holds within herself the future of the world.
E la Chiesa è giovane.
Yes, the Church is alive. This is the wonderful experience of these days. During those sad days of the Pope's illness and death, it became wonderfully evident to us that the Church is alive. With these words, I greet with great joy and gratitude all of you gathered here, my venerable brother, cardinals and bishops, my dear priests, deacons, church workers, catechists. I greet you, men and women religious, witnesses of the transfiguring presence of God. I greet you, members of the lay faithful, immersed in the great task of building up the kingdom of God, which spreads throughout the world in every area of life. With great affection, I also greet all those who have been reborn in the sacrament of baptism, but are not yet in full communion with us. And you, my brothers and sisters of the Jewish people, to whom we are joined by a great shared spiritual heritage, one rooted in God's irrevocable promises. Like a wave gathering force, my thoughts go out to all men and women of today, to believers and non-believers alike.
A tutti gli uomini del nostro tempo, credenti e non credenti.
And smiling broadly, he went on to say,
cari amici, in questo momento,
my real program of governance is not to do my own will, not to pursue my own ideas, but to listen, together with the whole Church, to the word and the will of the Lord, to be guided by Him, so that He Himself will lead the Church at this hour of our history. Instead of putting forward a program, I should simply like to comment on the two liturgical symbols which represent the inauguration of the Petrine ministry.
Di commentare i due segni con cui viene rappresentata liturgicamente.
The lamb's wool is meant to represent the lost, sick, or weak sheep, which the shepherd places on his shoulders and carries to the waters of life. For the fathers of the Church, the parable of the lost sheep which the shepherd seeks in the desert, was an image of the mystery of Christ and the Church. The human race, every one of us, is the sheep lost in the desert, which no longer knows the way. The Son of God will not let this happen. He can't abandon humanity in so wretched a condition. He leaps to his feet and abandons the glory of heaven in order to go in search of the sheep and pursue it all the way to the cross. He takes it upon his shoulders and carries our humanity. He carries us all. He is the Good Shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep. What the pallium indicates, first and foremost, is that we are all carried by Christ, but at the same time it invites us to carry one another. Hence the pallium becomes a symbol of the shepherd's mission. The pastor must be inspired by Christ's holy zeal. For him it's not a matter of indifference that so many people are living in the desert, and there are so many kinds of desert. There's the desert of poverty, the desert of hunger and thirst, the desert of abandonment, of loneliness, of destroyed love. There's the desert of God's darkness, the emptiness of souls, no longer aware of their dignity or the goal of human life. The external deserts in the world are growing because the internal deserts have become so vast. Therefore, the earth's treasures no longer serve to build God's garden for all of us to live in, but they've been made to serve the powers of exploitation and destruction. The Church as a whole and all her pastors, like Christ, must set out to lead people out of the desert towards the place of life, towards friendship with the Son of God, towards the one who gives us life and life in abundance. How often we wish that God would show himself stronger, that he would strike decisively, defeating evil and creating a better world. All ideologies of power justify themselves in exactly this way. They justify the destruction of whatever would stand in the way of progress and the liberation of humanity. We suffer on account of God's patience, and yet we need his patience. God, who became a lamb, tells us that the world is saved by the crucified one, not by those who crucified him. The world is redeemed by the patience of God. It is destroyed by the impatience of man. One of the basic characteristics of a shepherd must be to love the people entrusted to him, even as he loves Christ, whom he serves. "Feed my sheep," says Christ to Peter, and now at this moment he says it to me as well. Feeding means loving, and loving also means being ready to suffer.
Che offre la sua vita per le pecore. Il palio dice innanzitutto.
My dear friends, at this moment I can only say, pray for me, that I may learn to love the Lord more and more. Pray for me that I may learn to love his flock more and more. In other words, you, the Holy Church, each one of you, and all of you together. Pray for me that I may not flee for fear of the wolves. Let us pray for one another, that the Lord will carry us, and that we will learn to carry one another.
But Pope Benedict XVI also spoke of the symbolism of the fisherman's ring. Quoting from the Gospel, he repeated those words that have become a hallmark of Pope John Paul II's pontificate. Do not be afraid.
Today, too, the Church and the successors of the Apostles are told to put out into the deep sea of history and to let down the nets so as to win men and women over to the Gospel, to God, to Christ, to true life. We are living in alienation, in the salt waters of suffering and death, in a sea of darkness, without light. The net of the Gospel pulls us out of the waters of death and brings us into the splendor of God's light, into true life. It's really true. As we follow Christ in this mission, to be fishers of men, we must bring men and women out of the sea that is salted with so many forms of alienation and onto the land of life, into the light of God. It's really so. The purpose of our lives is to reveal God to men. And only where God is seen does life truly begin. Only when we meet the living God in Christ do we know what life is. We are not some casual and meaningless product of evolution. Each of us is the result of a thought of God. Each of us is willed. Each of us is loved. Each of us is necessary.
È successore degli apostoli di prendere il largo nel mare della storia.
There is nothing more beautiful than to be surprised by the gospel, by the encounter with Christ. There is nothing more beautiful than to know him and to speak to others of our friendship with him. The task of the shepherd, the task of the fisher of men, can often seem wearisome, but it's beautiful and wonderful because it's truly a service to joy, to God's joy, which longs to break into the world.
Ciascuno di noi è frutto di un pensiero di Dio. Ciascuno di noi è voluto. Benedicat vos omnipotens Deus, Pater et Filius et Spiritus Sanctus.
As mentioned earlier on in the broadcast, you've been listening to Pope Benedict XVI's words delivered in Italian on the 24th of April 2005. Meanwhile, our weekly rendezvous with our popular Latin lover. He's Carmelite Father Reginald Foster. Watch the change of pace and tone. You know what I found? I found something that maybe you're interested in.
John Fisher. Oh, Lord.
Westmonasterian, which means Westminster, I guess.
Yeah, Westmonasteriensis.
The canonization of...
the Blessed Martyrs, Cardinal John Fisher, Bishop of Rochester, and Thomas More, the Chancellor of England.
Okay, in Latin, I'm reading here. Canonizationis Beatorum Martyrum...
Cardinalis...
Johannes Fisher,
Episcopi Rofensis,
and Thomas More, Tomae.
Tomae More, with More. Cancellarii Angliae.
Why does it start with super dubio? Super doubt?
Yeah, when they're asking a question.
So
and
a
because,
doubt.
Because the doubt is in the next line with these letters here. Whether a commission should be assigned of resuming the case at hand and for the effect about which we are talking. That's the doubt. God, it should we resume or undertake once again the case of canonization of these people? And then he goes on, of course, he has to say, you know, yes, of course. But
happened on the 18th of June, 1930. So inter beatos martyris Angliae, quae gloriosi titulo sanctorum insula appellabatur.
Okay, among the blessed martyrs of England, which used to be called the Island of the Saints, with a glorious title, two illustrious men shine forth like stars.
Stelle,
certainly.
Refugent. Due lustrus vire tamquam stelle
refugent. Oh, is that good? Okay, among all the blessed martyrs of England, you see, one in the high degree of ecclesiastical hierarchy, because he was a bishop, and constituted in the episcopal order, John Cardinal Fisher.
Okay,
the bishop of the people of Rochester.
I suppose Cardinal wrote this, no? Someone called Cardinal Laurenti.
Heaven's sakes.
But would this have been written in Latin by the cardinal's office, or would there be...
In those days,
you would have been out of a job.
I mean, we do these things every day.
Do you?
I was doing the canonization of, I don't know what, Spanish martyrs in the Civil War, you know, just this morning. So, I mean, these are flunkies. You know, secretaries who do this stuff.
You're a flunky. You describe yourself as a flunky.
Well, yeah, I mean, we just blah, 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 blah.
What's a flunky in Latin?
Oh, it's nequam. A worthless guy is a flunky. is Naquam.
Anyway, if you go down the page, it strikes me how they have a little bit of a biography of Thomas More.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
Who was born in London, Londini Natus,
anno 1480.
Oxoni.
Pius, Oxonii Educatus, educated in Oxford.
Why are there two I's on Oxonii?
Because it's what they call the locative. Oxonii in Oxford. Pius from his childhood, and so on and so on. Praebat fidelibus super abbot Celsia. He was taking the lead in front of all the faithful of his parish in Chelsea.
A man for all seasons.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
How do you say a man for all seasons?
Omnibus temporibus viraptus. Oh, I can say it better than that. You saw the movie and so on.
Yes.
And his daughters and Henry comes up there.
They speak about Henry VIII. If you
and
turn,
the daughters go out into the water and say, oh, salve me rex. And they address Henry VIII in Latin. When he came up on his barge up to Chelsea.
How'd you say Henry VIII came up on his barge?
Chelsea am venit in vicula sua Henricus rex.
In this text, if you turn that page and you go to the first paragraph here, they speak about Henry VIII. Paulo post rex Henricus
octavus.
Anyway, my Latin is, as you know, very limited, but I can see that his wife, Caterina, was irritas et sacrilegia.
No, be careful. No. Henry VIII, who, while his legitimate wife, Catherine, was still living, tentaverat, had tried invalid and sacrilegious marriage with Anna Bolena, when he had not been able to obtain the approval of his crime, nor of a divorce, nor of new matrimony, so on and so on, de facit, this is in line 5, he fell away from the Catholic religion and from obedience toward the Roman pontiff.
A religione cattolica et ab obedientia
erga Romanum pontificem de facit.
Et rebellionis vexillum
erected, and he set up a flag of rebellion.
Sub quos subditos.
Subditos suos cum nefando et credeli sue religion vultus abusu militare coage. Under which flag he forced subditos suos, his subjects, to fight with unspeakable nefando, an unspeakable and cruel abuse of his royal power. And that's why he says this doubt here at the end here. Affirmative.
If affirmative seo signanda.
Namely that a commission should be designated of the resumption of the case if it will have pleased his holiness. So that was the end of the doubt. Should we reopen the case of canonization for these two guys? And of course he says, yes, his holiness consider this a good thing, and so forth and so on.
Who was Pope Pius
the 11th, 1930.
Yeah. Heartfelt thanks there once again to Father Reginald Foster for sharing with us his scholarly expertise. Father Foster is currently working as papal translator at the Vatican's Secretariat of State. And that brings us up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.